You're listening to a High Voltage Radio Network podcast. Find more at highvoltageradio.com.
This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
Welcome to the Kings of Sport, the program that's changing the game one show at a time, with your hosts, Nate Milton.
Yes! That boy is good!
And Marcus Vandenberg.
What's up?
So sit back and relax, because you're now down with the Kings. And welcome to the Kings of Sport, the program that's changing the game one show at a time, a.k.a. the world's most dangerous sports show, a.k.a. iTunes' longest-running weekly episodic sports program produced and hosted by two or more African-Americans that are not affiliated with a major network. I'm your host, the Godfather, Nate Milton, joined as always by my partner in crime, Marcus. I got more frequent flyer miles than Carmen San Diego Vandenberg. What is going on, brother?
Yeehaw, Nate.
So I think before we get into the actual show, people want to know where in the world is Brother Lightskin this week. So why don't you give the people a quick update on your travels?
This week, I'm in Nolanville, Texas.
That's a little off the beaten path.
It's not your Vegas. It's not your Toronto. I'm a man of the people, Nate.
It's not even Atlanta.
The people are like 4,000 people who live in this town.
So I know you were in Dallas for WrestleMania.
Yes.
So were your expectations for Texas heightened because of that experience, and were they disappointed being where you are this week?
No, I mean, I flew through Dallas. Actually, I have a quick Dallas story. So I went to the Waffle House for the first time
on Thursday. Really?
Yeah. Service was awful. Like to the point where they forgot our waffle. And they made it, and they just sat there, and it got cold. So they made new waffles for us. But I will say the food was actually pretty good.
Yeah, Waffle House gets a bad rep because it's not exactly fancy. But in terms of food, especially if you're going like late night, they're not bad.
And it's cheap.
Yeah.
So it was interesting. We saw a guy who my wife spotted it, took a spoon, put it in his back pocket, and went to the restroom, and you can imagine what he did with the spoon. And he came out like 20 minutes later, and he was a mess. So I'm not going to say he got high, but I'm implying that he might have been on some drugs. So,
oh, yes.
Mind you, it was like 11 o'clock in the afternoon. Like,
hey, you will find everything at the Waffle House. Yeah. Like the Waffle House down here, the one probably 15 minutes away from the house, like, got robbed the other night. Like, and it wasn't even, like, late night. It was, like, 11 o'clock at night. Mm. Like, dude ran through when people was eating dinner, and he's like, hey, give me all your money. I'm like, yeah, the Waffle House, the Wild Wild West.
Yeah, so. Good times.
I was going to say, other than meeting Samuel Jackson from Jungle Fever at the Waffle House.
Crack kid.
Yeah. Don't make me do it.
I do it.
I do it.
This town is probably 2.5 hours south of Dallas and about 45 minutes north of Austin. So somewhere in between.
Okay.
It's Fort Hood, basically. If you know Fort Hood, Killeen, Texas, that's where I'm at. So today was my first experience on a military base, by the way.
Really?
Yeah. I always thought, picture it like a base to be like straight up barracks and like dirt roads and army trucks. No, it's like a little city. I didn't realize that.
Because you know, the families, a lot of times the families are there. So they have to have on base. Like, I practically grew up on a military basis with my pops being a retired Navy. So, yeah. It's its own little community because it's like, you know, they got their own schools, their own grocery stores, their own community centers. So, yeah, it's very... Like, I think I don't know if somebody's done it, but I think a documentary on kind of base life and how base life differs from city life mm-hmm. or rural life, and how the people that go through that type of upbringing are affected by it. I think that'd be fascinating.
Yeah, that was like, I had no idea. Like, we drove through and I was like, oh shit, it's a Jack in the Box. Like, I just had like no idea like what to expect on the base.
Yeah. Like, matter of fact, one of the best base experiences I've ever had was in Japan, because like, not for Japan itself, which was cool to visit, but the base had the best cafeteria / food court ever. Like, it had like a Burger King, had a Rally's, had a Sparrow.
Wow, Japan.
Yeah, had like a Charlie's Steakhouse. Like, yeah, it was good times.
Someone say burgers.
I was gonna say, speaking of burgers, I think the people were left with a bit of a cliffhanger this week, because Vanda Burgers, our new segment, got off to a good start last week, and then you posted something on the Facebook page that I think made people think you were going to be a one and done with your reviews.
Yeah. There might be rat DNA in my hamburger, but that's all right. I do it for the people.
So you're still in it. You're still in it.
I'm still in it. I actually have two. I'll save the good one for next week when I get back home. But I did have one in Texas the other night, so I'll give you that one.
Okay. So without any further ado, it is time for our weekly burger review segment, or Marcus's weekly burger review segment, little thing we call Vanda Burgers. Somebody, hit the music.
And now it's time for the freshest, hottest, and dare we say juiciest segment in the history of sports radio. Got beef? Well, brother Marcus is here to squash it. It's time for Vanda Burgers on the Kings of Sports.
We have the meat.
They call it Royale with cheese.
Royale with cheese.
That's right.
So week two. Actually, technically week three, because we did two last week.
Yeah.
So, flew to Dallas from LAX, got in after midnight, was hungry, driving around looking for food.
Real quick, are you now, because of the segment, like, do you feel compelled to order hamburgers when you go out?
No, I was, before the segment, I was eating burgers every Friday, basically.
So that's just your Friday thing?
Yeah, it's the Friday thing, but now it's happened to be a Wednesday night, early Thursday morning thing for this week. Came to a corner which basically had three options for me. We had a McDonald's, we had a Burger King, and we had a Jack in the Box. And haven't had Burger King in a long, long time, so I decided to go with Burger King. And I had a Whopper Jr. because it was like 1 o'clock in the morning, so I didn't want a Whopper. Growing up in high school before my diet changed, I loved the Whoppers. I thought of the fast food burgers, they were the king by far. Not saying much, but they're easily the best. And I'll have to say, they still hold up. They're still pretty good, considering it's fast food.
Yeah, I'd say the Whoppers aren't my favorite fast food burger, but they're certainly the most consistent.
Yeah, and I think the Whopper Jr. is the right size.
Yeah.
Couple bucks.
Did you go with the French fries or the onion rings for the side?
Yeah. French fries, but Burger King French fries, they bottom three of fast food establishments. I mean, they're terrible.
I usually opt with the onion rings just because I think their onion rings are a little better than their French fries.
And I know they tried changing the recipe or the oil or something recently, the last few years, and that didn't help any. I mean, those fries are pretty bad. If they did, I think the joke was if you take McDonald's fries and Burger King burgers, you would have the perfect fast food establishment, but
yeah,
alas, we have Burger King French fries to deal with. So, just a solid, good fast food burger. It's not the best burger in the world, but in terms of if you're on the run and you got to get something, I would say compared to Carl's Jr., from last week. Definitely a step above the Western bacon cheeseburger. So
okay,
I gave that what, 2 crowns last week?
Yeah, that got 2 crowns. I think you gave
the hotel
burger.
Got 3.
Yeah,
I'm going to give the Whopper Jr. 3.
Okay, so consistent with the Toronto Renaissance Hotel burger,
especially if you factor in the price. Yeah. The Renaissance burger cost me,
let's say Whopper Jr., like with the Whopper Jr. meal is like what, $3-4?
$4. And the Renaissance meal cost me $15-16 Canadian. So like $12
so
American.
$20.
No, other way around. The dollars is flipped. So it's you get more bang for your buck as an American in Canada.
Yeah. Thanks, Obama.
Yeah, thank you. Don't mess it up, Trump.
So you give the Whopper Jr. 3 crowns?
I give it 3 crowns. And in terms of the fast food restaurants outside of the In-N-Out of the world, I think it's going to be tough to beat that one.
Yeah, I think in terms of fast food burgers, like, I think Burger King is, like, I've never had my favorite burger at Burger King, but I've never had my least favorite burger either.
Yeah.
Like, I think they're consistent, like, across the board. Whatever Burger King you go to, it's pretty much going to be a consistent, good fast food hamburger. Whereas, like, I think I've had great Hardee's burgers, but I've also had terrible Hardee's burgers. Like, I've had great Wendy's burgers, but I've also had Wendy's burgers that you can really taste the rat DNA coming through.
Yeah, and speaking of that rat DNA, I drove past Whataburger, and I did not stop. I had a bad.
Hey, I was gonna say I thought that was gonna be a big hook for Texas.
As soon as I saw it, I had flashbacks of my trip for WrestleMania and the taste in my mouth I had then, so I couldn't do it.
So no Whataburger on this particular excursion.
Next time maybe.
So you see, you got another one in the back pocket that you're gonna bring to the people next
week. Yes, from Las Vegas.
Okay. Got a Vegas burger. So Yeah, I think that is a good place to kind of leave things off for the A Block, another solid edition of Vander Burgers, and a little tease for what's to come next week. But what's to come here on the show, Marcus? I think we've got a couple of interesting things to talk about. Coming up next, we're going to do a little chat about the NBA playoffs, as well as something that Jermaine Jones, a friend of the program, has been wanting us to talk about for a while, and that's, is the NBA watered down compared to the 80s and 90s? Hmm. So we'll definitely get into some good conversation about that. And then in segment 4, we're going to talk some RG3. So for all the Cleveland fans and listeners out there that are happy about the Cavs, we're going to talk some Browns to bring you back to earth. So I think we're going to go out with some I'm going to have a theme this week, Marcus. I'm producing on the fly here. Because Chance the Rapper's new mixtape dropped this week. Coloring Book, which is really strong and really solid. I just downloaded it Thursday. We're recording this on a Friday. And so I haven't really spent a lot of time with it, but I dig it. It's very much, you know, the whole thing about Life of Pablo, when we reviewed that, was Kanye was like, this is a gospel album with cursing. But really, he only had like 1 or 2 songs that you would kind of consider gospel.
This is actually the gospel album with cursing.
Right, this is actually the gospel album with cursing.
Featuring Lil Wayne.
Featuring Lil Wayne and Juice WRLD.
And Young Thug.
and Kirk Franklin, who makes a return appearance.
Yes.
So, yeah, we're going to go out with some Chance the Rapper and come back. That'll be the musical background for this show. But, yeah, I think it's going to be a fun show. So, if you're out there listening or on your way home from work or going out to get one of those rat burgers, don't you change that channel, because we'll be back with more of the Kings of Sport right after this. This is a...
Talk to the serpent. That's a holistic discernment. Daddy said I'm so determined. Told me these goofies can't hurt me. I just might make me some Earl tea. I was baptized like we're early. I might get Satan and swirly. Wish I could tell you it's ready. Tell you it's ready today. They don't give nothing away. You gotta
fight for your way. But that don't take nothing away. Cause at the end of the day, music is all we got. Music is all we got. Rhythm is all we got.
What in the wide, wide world of sports is going on here?
All we got.
Promotional consideration paid for by the following.
What's up, everybody? This is Kevin Kelly. Make sure you check out every episode of The Kevin Kelly Show right here on the Place to Be Nation. PlaceToBeNation.com. The Kevin Kelly Show. Every episode is a winner. At least we hope.
Place to Be Nation's Justin Rosero here. In addition to The Kevin Kelly Show, we have a ton of great podcasts available to you on iTunes at PlaceToBeNation.com. You can check out Scott Criscolo and me on the Mothership, the Place to Be podcast, with our famous Vintage Vault pay-per-view reviews. PTBN also covers current-day wrestling with Main Event, Mission Indie Possible, and our monthly pay-per-view reaction shows with immediate feedback on WWE, NXT, and Ring of Honor Super Shows. And relive wrestling's past with our monthly pay-per-view rewind series, led by Ben Morse, and the Dangerous Alliance Wrestling podcast as we dive into various subjects in the form of exercises and games. We got sports covered too with the Sports Evolution Mega Show with Scott, Dr. G, Cowboy, and Cowboy Sr., the Kings of Sport led by Live Audio Wrestling's godfather Nate Milton, as well as the NBA Team Podcast and the TJ McClune Show. PTBN tackles pop culture and irreverence with Richard and the Mailman, the Glenn Butler Podcast Hour Spectacular, and if you like a hybrid of all of this in list form, check out Jordan Duncan's Rank and File. All these shows are available on PlaceToBeNation.com, where we cover pro wrestling, sports, movies, comics, plus tourneaments and more. We want to thank our friends at Boneheads Wing Bar in West Warwick, Rhode Island in Fall River, Massachusetts, and Scott Keith's Blog of Doom. Be sure to follow us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and Tumblr as well. PlaceToBeNation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
And now it's time to return to the podcast that's changing the game one show at a time.
It's the Kings of Sport. TheKingsOfSport.com.
You don't want zero problems, big fella.
Yup. If one more label try to stop me, it's gonna be some dreadhead niggas in your lobby. You don't want no problem, want no problem with me. You don't want no problem, want no problem with me. Just another day at the pickup on the mail. They gon' channel riding through the street, they be like they go.
Just call me a loser.
Is this her debut appearance on the podcast?
That's my cousin, yeah.
We got all the Vanderburg kin.
I know.
It's wonderful. So, welcome back to the Kings of Sport. Nate and Marcus holding things down, as you can hear in the background. Marcus is enjoying his time out in Texas.
I am a loser, Nate.
Yes, you are a loser, much like the Toronto Raptors.
Oh, man. Oh.
The team you picked to go to the NBA Finals.
A.K.A. Other. I'm going to refer to him as Other now, because until they win a game, the CBS poll is accurate for them. They're Other to me.
Yeah. Man, what a series already. And, yes, we are talking NBA playoffs in this particular segment. And we've got a compelling series out west with Golden State and Oklahoma City tied 1-1. And in the east, it's pretty much a formality at this point, Marcus. Like, Toronto may win game three back by that home crowd, but it's not going to matter.
Yeah, normally I would say, hey, wait until they return home to see what happens, but yeah, I mean, they were close the first.
And when you got your boy Kyle Lowry walking the halls trying to get his mind right,
he was mad. He had a clear his head.
And then is this a true thing? I've heard people on ESPN talk about it today, but did he actually try to holler at Cavs coach Ty Lue to get some advice?
Oh, I haven't heard that rumor yet.
Yeah, it's apparently he wanted to go hang with Ty Lue and watch some footage and because I guess, you know, he respects Ty Lue and he's been a mentor to him. And it's like, come on, man. Have some professional pride.
Man.
Like, this is like, what was it, a few years ago when Paul George said he wanted LeBron to be a mentor when they were in the Eastern Conference Finals?
Yeah, can't say that.
Come on, man. But, I mean, they could very well win Game 3, Marcus. But, like I said, even though it would only be 2-1 at that point, I think what we've seen thus far from Cleveland in the postseason and what we've seen from Toronto, who is a broken team, they got some key injuries, and they just don't seem right. I think, you know, it's pretty much a foregone conclusion that LeBron will once again make his way to the finals.
I think so, and then you know what's going to be, I guess, shitty for LeBron is, let's just say, Cleveland sweeps Toronto and they've won 12 straight games to get to the finals and then don't win the finals.
Yeah. The only thing I think that could kind of soften the blow is if they lose to Golden State. Because I think if OKC ends up beating Golden State and then ends up beating the Cavs.
Yeah, it's even worse.
That to me is more of a knock against LeBron and the Cavs than if they lose to the defending world champions who had the best series by statistics in the history of the NBA.
Yeah. It's going to be interesting. I mean, he's going to face the pressure eventually. I think right now he's fine, but once June rolls around, he's going to be really feeling it.
Yeah, but I will say, though, I am more confident in this version of the Cavs. Like, I still think the team from the West is going to win. Mm-hmm. You know, I had picked San Antonio, but obviously that's not going to happen this year. But I think whoever comes out of the West will and should be the favorite. But I feel better about this year's Cavs teams heading into the finals than the team last year where it was pretty much LeBron and the other guys.
Yeah, I think Kevin Love has really developed into a different player with Blatt gone. Kyrie's hurt. Hurty just made up a word there.
Kyrie, that's one of them Texas words. You know, he look real healthy right now.
Kyrie is healthy, but I still think Kyrie versus Steph or Kyrie versus Russ, and he's a liability defensively. So, and then, you know, I think Golden State doesn't have this liability like maybe Oklahoma City does with Deion Waiters or Cleveland does with J.R. Smith, but one of those guys are your, you know, guys you trust on offense, you run the risk.
Yeah, and when the other thing I would say that gives me a little bit of hope, if I'm somebody out there in Cleveland, shout out to Hat Club Andy from Maxology, our Cleveland correspondent. Like, if I'm Andy, what would kind of give me hope is that this postseason for the Cavs has been pretty easy, and they've had a lot of time off. And so, barring any injuries in these last few games they have with the Raptors, they're going to go in at full strength, which is a luxury at this point of the season.
And they'll have at least a week off, probably.
Yeah, and LeBron is looking – compare this postseason LeBron to last year, and I think it's night and day. Like, LeBron looks more energized. You know, he had that big steal, which led to a coast-to-coast reverse dunk last night. Mm-hmm. Like, he looks physically like he's – in a better position than he was last year when they faced the Warriors.
Yeah, I mean, last night he was upset about his missed free throws, and they had won by 20, so.
So, yeah, it looks like Cleveland is on its way to another NBA Finals. But on the West, Marcus, real quick, OKC made a statement stealing home court by winning Game 1. Golden State came back and did what Golden State does. But do you see this? You see this going 6 or 7? Do you see this being a long, drawn-out series? Or do you think now that Golden State's back on the winning track, this just kind of becomes Golden State doing what they've done all season?
See, it's hard because I didn't see Game 2. I was flying. And I checked the score on the flight and was surprised to see how one-sided it was. So I think it's going to be really hard for Oklahoma City to beat Golden State three more times, just the way Steph Curry's been playing and how he can go off. So I'm going to say Golden State in six.
Yeah. I mean, I think those games in OKC are going to be really important, really pivotal. Like, they're not quote-unquote must-win games, but they really are if they want to have a chance to upset the Warriors.
Yes. I think if they can split 2-2, I mean, they would need to win game five in Golden State, which I don't – that's going to be tough.
By the way, I got to say as a side note that I know the listeners are probably experiencing the same thing right now. Like, I like this – Marcus Vandenberg out on the porch, probably got a cold drink in his hand. We hear the ambient sounds in the background. It's like This American Life.
National Public Radio. This is what Brian Mann is striving to do his podcast. I give you the natural version.
Yeah, we don't need all that extra production, Brian.
Yeah.
This is like what's the show? Prairie Home Companion. Meanwhile, back in Lake Wobegon.
Deep in the heart of Texas.
that's the NBA playoffs as they stand right now. But I wanted to get into something that I alluded to it in the A block, Marcus, that a listener of the program, Jermaine Jones, has made mention of to both you and I.
Mm-hmm.
And that is something that Tracy McGrady and others have brought up recently. And that is that they feel that the NBA currently is more watered down and has less star players than the NBA of the 80s and the 90s. Do you think there's any validity to this argument, Marcus, or is that just kind of old man being mad at the hot new thing?
I would tend to disagree. I think when you compare the NBA now to the 80s and 90s, you're really not factoring in the European influence that's sort of taking over the game. You weren't seeing, I mean, Tony Kukoc was a rare occurrence in the 90s like that. Yeah. How many guys now are better than Tony Kukoc from Europe who are playing the NBA? And the fact that these guys aren't allowed to go straight from high school to the pros, they're at least doing it for 1 year. And it might be, yeah, it's 1 year, but it does make a difference for some of these guys. And it sort of prevents them from making the mistake of leaving before they're not ready and then getting drafted. And, you know, Jonathan Bender, for example, someone who was hyped up as this Nets great star, straight out of high school and out of the league within years. So I don't agree with Jermaine's and Tracy McGrady's comments about the league being watered down. If the example is Steph Curry's MVP, well, I need more examples than someone winning unanimous MVP.
Yeah. I think, Marcus, that it is a different game. I think players in general, on the whole, are better than the players in the 80s and 90s. I think that the game is different. It's more wide open. But I do think there is maybe an argument to be made in terms of the star power part of the question.
Mm-hmm.
Because I kind of was talking with somebody else about this online and came up with something called the NBA Jam Theory. And, you know, you are from the same time frame when, you know, I was growing up, Marcus. You know about the greatness of NBA Jam.
I do.
And one of the great things about NBA Jam was that it seemed like every team had at least one or two guys that you could consider either star players or really good players.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that, I don't know if it's a better job of marketing or if it is actually that there were, you know, because even on some terrible teams back in the day, you know, you had Allen Iverson and Dikembe Mutombo on the Sixers, or you'd have, you know, Sean Kemp and Gary Payton on the Supersonics. But while I think the league in general is better and it's not watered down, I do think there aren't as many stars going around in the league. And maybe that's because you've got so many stars kind of teaming up and we didn't see that back in the day.
That is a good question. I mean, you would think in today's world where people love to brand themselves and the way teams promote themselves on Twitter and Facebook, you would think that there'd be more stars currently in the NBA. But the first thing that came to my head was Memphis. Like, who would be like the NBA GM for the Memphis Grizzlies at the moment? Mark Gasol and what, Zebo?
Yeah, so, yeah, you know, Matt Barnes is going to be the unlockable character. Because he just fights.
So, yeah, I mean, there's certain teams like that, you know, just the Nets have Melo and Porzingis, but Brooklyn, for example. Like, who would you fit from Brooklyn? Brooke Lopez and who?
Like, Joe Johnson would have been that guy, but he's not on the team anymore.
Jared Jack? I mean, it's like, who do you pick from as a second guy?
So, like, even if you talk about, like, the Phoenix Suns back in the day, like, they weren't this glamorous marquee team, but you had a Charles Barkley or you had a Dan Marley or even a Rex Chapman that kind of resonated with the fan base. And I don't know, like, the Orlando Magic had Shaq and Penny and Nick Anderson. Like, the Orlando Magic today, who they got?
Well, to be fair, A, that team won zero titles. B, Nick Anderson wasn't. I mean, Nick Anderson,
he was good until he wasn't when he had the whole free throw debacle.
But if you put Nick Anderson wouldn't be the best player on the Magic's current roster. I think Penny was someone who, talent wise on paper, was great, but the end result was probably not what people expected. So, I mean, he was definitely a name, but in terms
Penny to me is very much like he was the
point guard Grant Hill.
He was the point guard Grant Hill, but also kind of like a precursor to Tracy McGrady.
Yeah.
Like, all the talent in the world, but, like, he was a good player. Like, you can't take that away from Penny, but he was never this transcendent player that we thought he might be.
No, he wasn't, which was unfortunate.
But yeah, it's like, I think, I think Jermaine was trying to make the point that the East is really weak, and in some way does that diminish what LeBron's doing? And I'm like, no, you know, the East is weak, but it doesn't diminish LeBron's accomplishments because every other team had the opportunity to play in this weak East. You know, Dwayne Wade and them boys had the opportunity to play in this weak East. Carmelo Anthony is supposed to be a star, and what's he done in this watered-down, quote-unquote, Eastern Conference?
Hello, Derrick Rose.
Derrick Rose, yes.
In that weak East.
In this weak East. So, yes, the East is weak, but I don't think that diminishes what LeBron's done.
And it's not, I mean, let's be clear, it's not as weak as it once was. I mean, the Eastern Conference is not a team, or at least not a conference this past season that was getting in teams that were, you know, 8-10 games under 500 in the playoffs. I mean, the Bulls did make the playoffs this year, and they're right at 500, I think.
Yeah,
around there. So, I mean, it's not the same. The West is pretty even this year compared to the East in terms of your bottom teams. You had Utah and Houston fighting out for the 8th spot, and they're, you know, roughly 500 as well. So I think that's sort of more of a stigma attached to the conference.
Yeah, I would tend to agree. And I think the other thing is, in a way, it highlights LeBron James, because if you take him off of the Cavaliers, then what's the difference between this Cleveland Cavaliers team and the Hawks or the Heat or any of the other playoff teams in the East?
Yeah.
It's not that big of a difference. So I think, you know, he was making the case, what would LeBron have done if he had been in the Western Conference the past 5 or 10 seasons? And it's like, no, he wouldn't have the consecutive finals or as much success as he had. But I do think that you put LeBron on an average team in the West and they're a playoff team. And if you put LeBron on a good team in the West, like you put LeBron on the Clippers, and who knows, they might have a title by now.
Yeah. You know, I mean, I'm trying to think of what's the weakest team that you could put LeBron on and he could.
Like, who was the 8th seed this year? Was it Portland?
Houston.
Houston. Like, that's a bad example.
Because they have, they should have been higher than 8th seed. So, Utah.
Yeah, you put LeBron on Utah, I'm not saying that they win the championship, but I think they make the play. Yeah,
easily.
They're a solid team. Like, you put LeBron on the Grizzlies. You know, we just talked about them not having any stars, and they're a team that can push the Spurs and push the Warriors.
Yeah.
So, I think Actually, though, if you put LeBron on the Lakers, I think they might make a case for the 8th seed.
Well, LeBron and Kobe, yeah, I'm sure they could figure it out.
And look, Kobe, see, that's That's crazy that those two never got together over the course of Kobe's career, because he, to me, is kind of the perfect superstar to share the headlines with Kobe. Because Kobe would love playing with LeBron, because LeBron's first instinct is to be a distributor.
Yeah.
Unlike, you know, playing with a Dwight Howard or somebody like that, who, as we saw today with the Jackie Mack story, you know, he was in Daryl Morey's office apparently wanting more touches. Like, come on, man. Come on, you haven't earned this, Dwight.
Dwight. We didn't talk about the Inside the NBA interview from a couple weeks ago.
Oh, man.
That was fascinating TV to watch live.
I am so glad for Kenny Smith and for fans of Inside the NBA that he didn't take that job.
Yeah. Oof.
It looks like it's going to D'Antoni now.
I know. That was – I got nervous when he interviewed. I was like, oh, no, don't mess up with your thing. But we're safe for another year. And no Kobe, it sounds like.
No. I think Kobe will be a fascinating person if he decides to get into the world of broadcasting, though.
Yeah. I don't see it yet. I see it eventually, but just not yet.
Yeah, I think there's things he probably wants to do. But, to kind of wrap up on Jermaine's argument and Tracy McGrady's argument, I'd say, Marcus, that I don't think that it's watered down. I think it's just a different game. Like, you know, sports evolve just like society evolves. And while I think people of our age group have a fondness for 90s basketball, and the way that it was played and sort of that type of era, if you put these games side by side, the better game from an aesthetic standpoint is the game we're watching now, yeah. Especially the way teams like the Warriors and the Spurs play. So, I think it's not watered down, but there is a lack of stars that I think is interesting, because, like you said, we're in this social media era where everybody – maybe that's it, Marcus, that now we're in an era where everybody can be a star. So only the superstars are seen as larger than life, whereas back in the 90s, we didn't have the internet so much or social media so much. So those guys kind of popped off the screen.
You know what it is? You just mentioned it. You mentioned social media. Everybody has a fucking opinion on social media. That's what it comes down to. Everybody's an expert. Us included, too. So the same people who in 1982 might have felt like the league was watered down or not good, what was their platform? The letters to the editor? The fax machine? They just have a platform now. So they're just letting you know what they think about more.
Actually,
often.
It would have been sports radio.
Oh, yes. How do we forget sports radio? Well, cool.
They would have been calling in to who's your boy up in New York that fell asleep?
Mike Francesa.
Yeah, they would have been calling in Mike and the Mad Dog calling up there, bitching about the Knicks. Yeah. These aren't my Knicks. These aren't the way Phil Jackson and Pat Riley play.
Instead of Tony in the Bronx.
Like, John Starks is terrible. Oh, so I think I don't know what it is, Marcus. There's something about the NBA that this is going to sound crazy, and I think we'll end this segment on this blasphemous statement. But it wouldn't shock me, Marcus, if 15 years from now or 20 years from now, somewhere in that time frame, the NBA is the most popular sport in the world. Not counting soccer. I'm talking about the most popular American sport.
Over football?
I
don't see it.
Really? See, because I think that the NFL is not getting stopped anytime soon, but I do think that the health and safety aspect is something that's going to be a thorn in their side.
I just look at the numbers. The numbers, I mean, they have a long way to go before they're even close to football. I would take a death on the field to even start that process, because the numbers are – and I don't know what it is. The demographics are, I believe, close enough where there's the same amount of black players playing football compared to basketball.
Yeah.
But for some reason, basketball does not resonate the same way with the white audience as football does. And I don't know if that's because in football, yes, you have your black players, but let's be honest, the star player on your team is the quarterback. And we've talked about black quarterbacks all year long. There's only so many.
As we will in about 5 minutes.
I know. So when your star player is white, I think, you know, that draws in more people. I hate to say it, as I sit here in Texas, Tony Roma. But I think, you know, when you look at the NBA, by far, your best players, hands down, are black. Yeah. And your white players are sort of like your, outside of your rare few, are your 12th man on the bench, or seen as just guys you have around. They're not really taken seriously.
Well, the thing is with the great white players in the league, most of them are not American.
Yes, that too.
Whether it's like a Dirk Nowitzki or Steve Nash, they come from other countries. So even if, say, I'm a white fan that for whatever reason only wants to root for white players, like my options are limited in terms of a white American. Like I can
Gordon
I can
Hayward. Is he the best white American player currently in the league? I think he might be.
Like, Kevin Love, man. How you Kevin Love like that?
Yeah.
Damn, no love.
See what you did there.
So on that note, good NBA conversation. Shout out to Jermaine, friend of the program, for sparking that conversation. And looking forward to seeing how the playoffs continue to roll forward. But moving forward with this particular episode of the Kings of Sport, we have got a great discussion on tap in segment four. We're going to be talking about RG3. And Marcus alluded to maybe the only thing that could stop the NFL's popularity is a death on the field. We're going to be talking about RG3 and a franchise that has been pretty much dead on the field for the past decade. Shout out to Cleveland. So don't go anywhere. We're going to come right back. More Kings of Sport right after the break.
Boy love playing when the boy too sick. Reclining on a prayer, I'm declining to help. I've been lying to my body, can't rely on myself. But no, last year I got addicted to Zan. Start forgetting my name and start to miss my chance. LA for 4 months, end up leaving right back. I'm in love with my city, bitch, I'm sleeping my hat. I felt hog-tied ever since my dog died. He lit an 84, damn, that's a long ride. I know he up there, he just sitting anyway. I'll be racing up the stairs, I'ma get to the gate singing.
What's going on, party people and everybody out there in podcast land? It's your man, Nate. And we'll get back to the show in just a little while. But while we got some time, I just wanted to let you guys know the three ways you can get in touch with the Kings of Sport. Way number one, you can tweet us on Twitter, because that's where people tweet people, apparently. You can hit us up on Twitter at KOS_POD. That's CosPod on Twitter. Way number two, you can email us at thekingsofsport@gmail.com. That's thekingsofsport@gmail.com. And finally, you can hit us up on our Facebook page, facebook.com/thekingsofsport. So there you have it. Those are the three ways you can get in touch with us. You can leave feedback. You can join the discussion. Three ways you can be down with the Kings.
We good, Marcus? Do we have to pay warranty for this? Because I ain't got G-Funk money.
Welcome back to the world's most dangerous sports show. Follow the danger online at facebook.com/thekingsofsport.
Can you dig it? Can you dig it? Can you dig it?
We are back on the Kings of Sport, ready to close up shop for yet another week. But before we do, got to send a couple shout-outs. First of all, to our friends over at Place to Be Nation. Place to Be Nation, your one-stop spot for the latest and greatest sports news, articles, and opinions. There you go. That's how you recover.
Smooth.
We're going to talk about a story of recovery a little bit later. But if you want the best news, articles, opinions, and podcasts when it comes to sports, including the Kings of Sport podcast, check out Place to Be Nation at placetobenation.com. And a shout out, as we do every week, to the good people at High Voltage Radio Network. High Voltage Radio is where you can find the internet's most diverse and dysfunctional selection of podcasts for your listening pleasure. Shows like Axology, The Pittsburgh Nerd, Attack of the Fangirl, and of course, Mr. Throwback Thursday with frenemies of the program, Bill and Jamie. So check out highvoltageradio.com as well as placemenation.com and tell them the King sent you. Well, Brother Marcus, it is time for segment four. And this, for those new to the program, this is where we kind of talk about some of the ratchetness going on in the world of sports and pop culture. But this week, I wanted to do something a little bit different because there was an article on the newly launched Undefeated website, which kind of caught my eye. And it is a very long article, but it is very interesting. And it features one of our favorite subjects, and that is black quarterbacks, and in particular, Robert Griffin III. And so I wanted to know if you had a chance to check out the article or some of the highlights written by Jason Reed. First of all, you know Jason?
I don't know Jason personally, but Jason Reed and I went to the same barber when he was working at the LA Times.
So it's the official black journalist barber?
Yeah, that's LA. That's so LA.
You're like, hey, Marcus. The same barber. How you doing, Marcus? I just seen J.A. Adande.
Pretty much.
All of y'all getting the same fade. Yeah, I'll take the Rob Parker, the number three.
Oh man, Rob Parker.
I'll bring up Rob Parker in a little bit, but because it does pertain to the story. But did you get a chance to check out some of the highlights of this article, which is entitled, if you want to check it out, "The Puzzling Plummet of RG3: Can the Once Stellar QB Rebuild His Career with the NFL's Blackest Organization?" Did you get a chance to check it out?
I did not get a chance to check it out. I saw the highlights, and I have not really had a chance to really sit down and read any of the Undefeated stuff, like in terms of the long form stuff. Shout out to Mark Spears, former Yahoo Sports writer, who wrote something on Sean Livingston. But yes. I saw the key money stuff about Shanahan and Griffin.
Yeah, that was a big part of it. It's pretty much kind of a three-part story. And for those of you that haven't read it, go check it out. But the first part is kind of the dysfunction within the Redskins, where you got Shanahan and his son kind of going up against RG3 and Dan Snyder, the owner of the Redskins. Mm-hmm. The second part is kind of RG3 and the way that he views himself kind of growing up, as we talked about earlier, you know, growing up in that military family and growing up on military bases.
Right. Speaking of someone who's familiar with Fort Hood, and I drove through Waco on the way down here.
Yes, and it talks about how he kind of views himself as not so much above race, but it's not front of mind with him. And then the third part is the way that RG3 has kind of rejected the advances of the black quarterback fraternity, people like Warren Moon, Doug Williams, Donovan McNabb, etc. So it's interesting. Like, I hadn't read a lot of Jason Reed's stuff, and apparently he has written a lot about RG3 over the past couple
of years. Yeah, he's covered the Redskins.
So I don't know if there's any animosity between the two of them. But this is an article that certainly does not take the viewpoint that RG3 is the good guy or the victim or can be redeemed.
He's not the good guy. He's not the bad guy. Sorry, I didn't help myself.
He's the black guy. But yeah, it's certainly, like, I don't think it's a hatchet piece, but it's certainly not a pro RG3 article.
Okay.
But yeah, I think the big ticket item that you alluded to is kind of the meeting that RG3 called after the season with the Shanahan.
Yes.
And the quarterback coach at the time. And this is interesting because on the one hand, Marcus, I don't like the way he did it, but I do like the sentiment. And so basically, RG3 called for a meeting, and he basically told Mike and Kyle Shanahan and quarterback coach Matt LaFleur to just kind of, you know, sit down and shut up, not in those exact terms. And he had a chalkboard out, and he had, like, video footage to accompany his points. And basically, he had four things written on the chalkboard. Mm-hmm. Number one, we have to change things. Number two, we have to change our protection schemes. Number three, this past season is unacceptable. And number four, that's the bottom line. And so right after this meeting, apparently Shanahan, feeling that RG3 was emboldened by Snyder, went to Snyder's office and told the owner directly, you know, you're going to destroy this kid because you're creating a monster. So just kind of off of those bullet points, Marcus, where did you come down when you first saw these recountings of what Shanahan had to say about RG3?
If you're the coach, I understand where Shanahan's coming from on some angle where you have this quarterback who's got nothing to show for. I mean, he's at, what, one year under his belt at this point?
One
great year. Was rookie of the year. But they didn't win anything. And he's now dictating to your staff, like, what's going to happen in the offseason. It'd be different if it was maybe Jay Gruden, the turn coach of the Redskins. But he's talking about Mike Shanahan, this guy who has coached Elway, who has won Super Bowls. It's like, really? You're really going to tell me this? Like, how things are going to operate around here? Okay, well, I'll just, you know, talk to your boss. I do appreciate the fact that he was that hungry to win and wanted a change that he decided to go about these things this way. But at the same time, I understand why Shanahan took issue with it.
Yeah, like I hate it from the standpoint of that's not how you do business if you're a professional. But I kind of love it from the standpoint of, yeah, this is a guy that's hungry. He wants to win. Like we always, our fans always complain that the athletes aren't passionate about winning. And this is certainly a dude that is passionate about winning. And I love the idea that, you know, he's, even though he's only had this one season in the league, he's like, the quarterback is the most important position in sports. You know, he's basically the CEO of this corporation. And so I don't like the delivery system for the message, but I do like the message.
And again, since this is sort of our thing, we have to ask the question. If this was
Andrew Luck.
No, all right, yeah, Andrew Luck.
Like I think, you know, like it's easy to say Peyton Manning, but let's go apples to apples. Like if this is Andrew Luck after his first year and he goes to who was his coach that first year? Was it
Pagano?
The brother.
No, it was
my man that's in Detroit.
Caldwell.
Caldwell, yeah. If he goes to Jim Caldwell and says, "Hey, Coach Caldwell, sit down. Let me talk.
Sit down,
you don't say
up,
nothing.
Don't say nothing."
Right? Would fans have the same kind of, "Oh man, this is why we don't like this dude" reaction?
Well, I mean, I haven't seen the fallout from the story, so I'm not sure what the reaction's been from the fan base about what RG3 did.
I think it's like from what little, because the article just came out this past week. Uh-huh. And again, people don't really like to read nowadays, and it is an investment.
It's long form, yeah.
Yeah, so I think, but from what little reaction I've seen, it's very much reminiscent of, and Jason Reed mentions it in the article, the divide that DC had when RG3 first got there, and the Redskins drafted both him and Kirk Cousins. It was kind of drawn along racial lines, where the brothers were down for RG3 regardless mm-hmm. of what he did, and the Caucasian folks were like, hold on, I'm not sold on this dude.
The fact that they drafted both of those guys the same year is still baffling to me.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, it worked out because Griffin got hurt, but just Griffin was healthy at the time. The fact that you would draft your quote-unquote franchise quarterback and then take another guy a couple rounds later, it's just like, what are you doing? But that's the Redskins.
Yeah. So I think... And I wanted to bring up, Rob Parker, who we alluded to earlier, because...
Colonel Rob Parker?
Colonel Rob Parker, no, not from WCW. Okay. Not the guy that came out there in the white suits, but your man Rob Parker, formerly of ESPN,
mm-hmm.
who had the infamous quote about RG3, that he's a cornball brother.
Uh-huh.
And I wonder, because there's other black quarterbacks that are brought up in this article, you know, Cam Newton is referenced. Russell Wilson is referenced. And I wonder, is part of what makes RG3 kind of hard to wrap your arms around as a fan? Because, you know, even though Cam Newton is divisive, the people that love Cam really love Cam.
Yeah.
Whereas with RG3, I don't know if it's a combination between injury and performance and who he is as a person. Like, I'm an RG3 fan, but I'm not like ride or die for RG3. And I don't think most RG3 fans are like 100% all the way in for RG3. And I think it's because a lot of his public perception is because of his own making.
Yeah, I think there's two other factors too that people might not want to admit to. Number one being those stupid bots braids he's wearing.
So you're saying if he had a nice fade?
If he had a nice fade, you know, it'd be a little different.
Well, what's the other fact?
I think the second is the white wife.
Yeah, man.
I think that was like, oh, okay, Robert. So you're going this direction, and people don't want to admit it, but I think that is a factor when we see, especially with athletes, and I feel like athletes have it tougher than your regular civilians on the street. But when you see the interracial couple, I think even from a black male's perspective, where you see the black guy with the white woman, especially if you're someone who dates primarily black women, I think you do look at them a little differently. And I do think with someone like RG3, who was now a newfound celebrity and had all this camera time, then you find out, oh, okay, he doesn't date sisters. It's like, all right, well, he's not one of us. Or
yeah, and I think a part of it is the city that he got drafted to.
Yes, Chocolate City.
You know, and I think the other half of that is, I don't know if the white community, if the white fan base does this, and our white brothers and sisters out there can write us and let us know on our Facebook page, facebook.com/thekingsofsport, if they do this because they're the default setting when it comes to talking about culture.
Uh-huh.
But I think like blacks and Latinos particularly, like if there's a black person that's out there excelling, we kind of put all this extra baggage on him.
Yeah.
That like Peyton Manning doesn't have to carry the burden of white quarterbacks or white society. Whereas with RG3, it's like, this dude represents us. When in fact, it's like, should he have to kind of carry the burden?
He represents Mr. and Mrs. Griffin.
Yeah.
And that's about it.
It's like, and that's, I think, you know, the white wife is part of it. I also think that, you know, him saying, you know, I don't really see race.
Yeah.
That's a part of it. You know, when so many of us in our day-to-day lives have to deal with racial politics and kind of racial social norms in life. And so it's like, I like RG3. I think he's a different cat. Like, I think he's somebody that may be a little too sensitive for his own good. As referenced by the kind of quote unquote clapback he had at the article. You know, he went on Twitter and said, how does a man hit a target he cannot see? The better question is, how does a man hit a target he does not have? Hashtag food for thought. I'm like, hashtag Negro, please. Like, it's like the thing, remember that message he posted in his locker?
Oh,
when he left? It's like, he's a smart dude, and he's a thoughtful dude, but sometimes it's very much kind of the, like, I don't know. It's like, man, sometimes I wish he would just be quiet for his own good.
I think Kaepernick has the same issues too. So I think RG3 is more complex and more, yeah. I don't want to say smarter than Colin Kaepernick, but he's just on a different level when it comes to how he sees the world than Cap.
And I think part of that, Marcus, kind of goes back to the military upbringing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and kind of one of the things that I've experienced just kind of growing up in a military family is that it's a blessing and a curse. Like, I can adapt in almost any situation because it's something that I've had to do. But kind of the navigating social norms and navigating kind of the public etiquette, I guess, is something that I you know, struggled with when I was younger.
Mm-hmm.
Cause it's like, you know, if I'm in Japan or if I'm in San Diego, or if I'm in Norfolk, you know, wherever I'm at, I'm adapting to different changes in different areas, but within the kind of bubble of the military base, it's got its own kind of hierarchy as opposed to the general society.
Yeah.
So I don't know if RG3, because you got to look, he went from this military upbringing to Baylor, where he was pretty much, you know, the toast of the town. And he really didn't face kind of hard public scrutiny until he got to D.C.
Yeah, and we won't touch on Baylor this week, but they have their own issues going on and at that campus.
So it's interesting, man, because I think you've got two things. Like, one is his head. You know, is his head right? Is his head in the game? Like, I know he came out here and he tweeted that I'm enjoying the process with my brothers on the field. Hashtag so thankful. But is his head going to be in the right place? And also, is he any good as a quarterback, yeah, Marcus? Because I still don't think we know that question. The answer to the question.
I have low expectations for him that season in Cleveland. I just think he needs talent, and I don't think Cleveland.
That's the other thing, man. This roster is terrible.
He's been set up to fail, and I think he's going to fail and fail hard. And I just hope he doesn't get hurt again.
Yeah, Ryan, it's like his life. I think it's a blessing and a curse, and Jason alludes to this in the article. Like, most people around the league think that him hooking up with Hugh Jackson is going to be a great thing for him as a player and also as a black quarterback. But the bad side of that bargain is you're in Cleveland, man.
Yeah.
Like, you have – like, I'm just looking at the depth chart right now. When the number two wide receiver is Brian Hartline, man.
Woo.
Like, the skill position players are terrible. Like, Isaiah Crowell and Duke Johnson are your running backs?
Yeah, they drafted Corey Coleman from Baylor, so they have the Baylor connection. They didn't play together, I don't believe, but he was a pretty good wide receiver during his time in Baylor. But, yeah, overall, I mean, they got a good tight end. And after that, good luck. I mean, like, I think Josh Jordan is someone who could help this team, but, you know.
Yes.
We know his issues.
Yeah, that would have been – like, I think it would be interesting to see those two on the same field. But I think this could be a situation, Marcus, where RG3 progresses both as
a
quarterback.
Hold on. Wasn't Jordan a Baylor guy?
Ooh, Josh Gordon?
Yeah.
Now, let's turn to the research – turn to the research department.
I got my laptop in front of me.
Josh Gordon, yep, Baylor.
Oh, man. They were teammates.
Yep.
So if they were, yeah, that would be interesting if to get those two back on the same page would be fun to watch.
Yeah, and I think this is a situation, Marcus, where RG3 might progress as a player and as a man, and particularly as a black man. I think being under Hugh Jackson's tutelage is going to be worlds different from Shanahan, who, even though it wasn't all Shanahan's fault, you could tell by the way he continues to talk about RG3 and his time with the Redskins. And Shanahan, he still got beef. Like, beef is real with the Shanahans. But I think that it could be a situation where we see growth from RG3, but we don't see a lot of winning because this team is just not set up to succeed.
Yeah, not yet.
So that's the story of the black struggle right there.
Good luck, Robert.
You can improve all you want, but sometimes you can't win.
Yeah, that's life. That's the American dream.
What Michael Jackson saying to win is you can't win, you can't break even, and you can't get out of the game.
Yeah.
but I think we're going to get out of this week's podcast game. Man, now that was a much better segue than trying to go through the websites earlier.
Got to close strong.
Yeah, gotta finish strong. And now I lost my place.
Yep.
But for the people out there, Marcus, that want to hit you up on social media, find out all about where you're at in Texas and maybe get some sneak previews on upcoming segments of Vanderburgers, where can the good people follow you at on these social media streets?
Follow me on Twitter and Instagram at Marco Will, MarcoWill.
And you can follow me on Twitter, in the number 8, MOZAIK, at Nate Mosaic. Follow the show. Follow the show on Twitter, at Cospod, KOS_POD. Facebook, facebook.com/KingsOfSport, as well as iTunes, Stitcher, all that good stuff. And next week, Marcus, I think you will be back in L.A.
Yes, I'm done traveling until July.
Okay. And I think we're going to have to talk some more NBA. We'll, of course, have the next installment of Vanderburgers. And who knows? Maybe we'll have a guest with us now that Marcus is
back home.
Is back home. And, you know, we're going to lose the ambient sounds and all that good stuff. But I really like this. I want you when you get home and we do the show in the following weeks just to like sit out on the front stoop.
Be a little different noise in Los Angeles compared to a cul-de-sac in Texas.
Like yeah, I like the
idea. I will snap a photo and post it on the Facebook page, so you like, get the full visual of what I'm experiencing right now.
Like Marcus, between the two of us, Marcus is decidedly the least country member of the team.
Yes.
But this is like I can imagine him out on the porch with the lemonade in the mason jar. Oh, good stuff, man. Well, enjoy the rest of your time in Texas, and we'll holler at you next week, brother.
All right, man.
All right, so for everybody out there, thank you once again for checking us out this week. We hope everybody has a safe and happy weekend, and we'll do it again next week on the world's most dangerous sports show, The Kings of Sport. So, for Marcus Vanderburg, I am the Godfather, Nate Milton. And if one more podcast tries to stop us, it's going to be some dreadhead niggas in the lobby. You only get that if you listen to Chance by now. Because you don't want no problems with us. And you've been down with the Kings.
Well, that's all for this week's edition of the Kings of Sport. Be sure to come back next week for an all-new episode. You can leave feedback for the show on Twitter at KOS_POD. Or via Gmail at thekingsofsport@gmail.com. Don't forget to like and rate us on iTunes and tell a friend. The Kings of Sport is a production of the Mosaic Podcast Network.
Whether you like it or not, he's back. D-A-double-D-Y, that's ass. Sharp as a tack, like I just left.